This is Finian Cunningham. I'm a freelance journalist, writer, and commentator. Previously, I worked in, as a staff journalist in various mainstream media, but I've been freelance now for the last 10 years, and my work is appearing in English language, Russian based news services like RT and Sputnik and Strategic Culture Foundation.
Whereabouts did you work in the mainstream in this part of the world, Finian?
Well, I worked for the Irish Independent. I did some work for the Irish Times, the Irish Mirror, the sister paper of the British Mirror newspaper, the Irish version. Pretty much all the newspapers in Ireland. I did some work also for the English Independent, the British Independent. So I worked for, I'm a newspaper man, Tony, and I worked for, quite a few of the national titles in Ireland and Britain. So, before I went into freelance work, and that's part of the reason for doing that was I just became disillusioned with the kind of editorial perspectives or framework of the newspapers. They weren't covering stories to the full extent that I believed they should.
Join the club. There's quite a few of us now, aren't there? I just wonder what it is you find difficult then about some of the Western mass media. I think there's quite a few of us people who've worked in that area that feel that it's not really delivering the service it should to the public. And maybe that it's working more for the advertisers than it is for the viewers, the listeners and the readers. Or what do you make of where's it gone astray?
Well, I think those issues you touched on are pertinent, Tony. The advertising kind of considerations and what draws in money, and also just the ideological alignment with governments and the government agenda. I mean, what kind of really disillusioned me about the newspapers was that during the Iraq War in the 2000s, the way the media and the one that I was working for was covering the war was as if it was a kind of noble war effort. And while I felt and millions of other people felt at the time that it was just an absolute horrific, criminal war, and it should have been cast in that kind of critical light, but the way it was being conveyed was a kind of World War II movie, and it just completely disgusted me. So that was one big factor in why I left. But subsequently, I mean, you can put up lots of other horrible examples, like what's going on in Yemen and how the Western media, the British media, do not really convey the full criminal horror of that war and the criminal involvement of the British government, French government, and the United States. And that is another cause for disgust and complete repudiation of that kind of media, because it's just not reporting the full extent of the horror and the criminality. And there's, of course, very good reasons for that. The newspapers are, the editorial powers are aligned with, government ministers who feed them with all sorts of information, for other stories. It's a cozy arrangement, and, it prevents from those media giving a full coverage. So ones, inquisitive or skeptical, critical people have to turn to alternative sources to get a proper perspective on various stories going, wars and conflicts going on.
Okay. There's always, Ireland is sort of out of the picture except for Shannon Airport. There's a lot of people actually pointing. Well, actually, there's only a few people pointing and a lot of people looking the other way, that this seems to be quite an important stop-off point for the United States forces on their way backwards and forwards to the Middle East.
Yes, that's true. I do realise that is a logistical hub for the CIA rendition programs and the US military in general. There's a lot of anger and disgust among the Irish people of that complicity of the Irish authorities. I think the public sentiment, the criticism would be kind of suppressed because the media here in Ireland don't really give it as much coverage as it should. So again, there is the issue we were talking about earlier, how media, the mainstream media, can control public perception and public sentiments. And you know, if the Irish media were a little bit more campaigning on that issue, it would no doubt result in a greater public protest, you know, on that issue. Yes.
Okay, so you've recently come back from Tigray in Ethiopia. Be interesting to know, you know, so right out in the middle of Africa, well, not middle of Africa, but North Africa. Can you tell us, because the fighting has been breaking out there recently, over the last few weeks, getting worse. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about Tigray. Where is it and what's it like?
Well, like a lot of people, I've had to leave Ethiopia under duress. So hopefully it's just a temporary exit from the country, because it has become so dangerous. The conflict that's really been brought on by the central government under this Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. Tony, in Ethiopia, there's about 9 regional governments. It's a federal structure, and Tigray is one of those 9. It's located way up in the north, most northerly region of Ethiopia, adjacent to the border of Eritrea and Sudan. And it's always been a famous culture. You know, the Aksumite Empire, they would trace back to the Aksumite Empire, which reputedly was the Queen of Sheba. And that empire straddled over, you know, parts of what became Yemen and Sudan and the northern Ethiopia, and this was Somalia too. So Tigray has its own distinct history and culture, and it's in Ethiopia is a melting pot of various ethnicities. You know, Tigrinya is just one of them. Others, like dozens of others, like Amhara, Oromo, Afar, you know, various other nations, you know, dozens of them. And it's a melting pot of these ethnicities. Now, when they had the revolution about 30 years ago against a Stalinist kind of regime called the Derg or Mengistu II, the Tigray rebels, the Tigray military led that revolution. They were also a left-wing kind of politics, but they really completely were opposed to the excessive, you know, repression under the Derg regime. And the revolution led by the Tigray People's Liberation Front really was pivotal in overthrowing Mengistu, the Derg regime. From that, then, they formed a new federated Ethiopia, and they formed a coalition government among all the other nations within Ethiopia. Although the TPLF, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, would have been the driving ideological force in that government. Now, it's alleged by Abiy Ahmed, who's the new prime minister, he came into power there about 2 years ago, that the last 30 years was a dark period of TPLF-led repression and violations. When I was living in Ethiopia for 8 years, before Abiy Ahmed came to power, I did not honestly see any great extent of violations or repression under the kind of TPLF-led government. So, you know, I think a lot of these accusations that are flying around now, trying to besmirch and, smear the Tigray People's Liberation Front, a lot of it's just fabrication and, propaganda. I mean, Abiy Ahmed, who comes from the Oromo people, he was actually a minister of technology in the TPLF-led coalition government that was dominant for 30 years after that revolution. He was actually a minister in that government, and he's from the Oromo nation. And there was other nations, co-governing with the Tigray. So it's kind of bizarre to me how these accusations are being made that the TPLF are somehow repressive and hogging the power all for the Tigrinya population. I mean, the Tigray population is only 5% of the total Ethiopian population. The Ethiopian population around 110 million. In Tigray, there's about 5 million people. So it's just implausible, the scenario that they're portraying, that the Tigray dominated the whole of Ethiopia for their very self-interest. And as I say, it's contradicted by things like Abiy Ahmed was a minister in that coalition government. Now, we can talk about what his agenda is, if you like.
Yeah, but please. And also, I mean, you know, there's not many people from the British Isles that have lived in Tigray. I wonder if you could just tell us a bit about what daily life is like there.
Well, it's a very arid part of Ethiopia. I mean, Ethiopia is, as it's with its people, the composition of its various peoples, is a very diverse country. I mean, it's got the most number of UNESCO World Heritage sites, you know, because of its diversity in culture and diversity in geography and climate. Tigray itself would be it's about 15 degrees north of the equator, and it's a very dry, arid climate landscape. It would be kind of similar to what you would imagine Yemen is. It would be on the same latitude as Yemen and South Sudan. So very dry, very harsh geography. Not great for agriculture. I mean, it would be prone to famine. And back in the 80s, whenever Bob Geldof and Live Aid organised that landmark international concert for Ethiopia's famine, it was for that particular region. The Tigray region is very prone to famine because of its harsh climate and harsh terrain. As I say, their culture, their ancestry would go back thousands of years to the Aksumite Empire. Their language is Tigrinya. It's a Semitic language related to Hebrew and Arabic. It has its own kind of script, and it's a very distinctive and very proud culture within Ethiopia. And the people are, by nature, have a very indomitable, very proud history, and very strong people, you know, probably because of the terrain, the environment demands of them a very, very strong kind of a physical and mental feature. And, as I say, they led the revolution 30 years ago against the Stalinist Derg regime. So the Tigray have, if you like, a natural quality of leadership in Ethiopia. But as I say, Tony, I want to emphasize, I did not truly, honestly witness a very skewed state, geared towards privilege to the Tigray people under the TPLF. I didn't see, where they were repressing all the other nations for their own self-advancement. I thought, after the revolution 30 years ago, the TPLF under Meles Zenawi, who was the prime minister then, they made a big effort to try to create a new unified federated nation out of all these nations, because in previous regimes, various other nations, sub-nations, were repressed and discriminated against, and they tried to bring in a whole new national vision of unity. And so the claims that are made against them now they're sort of like fabricated, it's propaganda to try to undermine the Tigray and to justify this present onslaught that's happening.
What about the European powers? Pretty much every inch of Africa over the years has been colonized, and some would say even after World War II, those colonial powers still lay claims to those countries. What about Ethiopia?
Yeah, well, that's quite true, Tony. I mean, Ethiopia, out of 54 nations in the modern map of Africa, Ethiopia is the only nation that was never colonized by European powers. The famous scramble for Africa during the late 1800s, where Africa was carved out by the European colonial powers. I think it's some conference in Berlin in the 1880s or something, you know, the various European powers were assigned African possessions, territories. And so the French, the British, the Germans, the Portuguese, the Belgians, they all piled into Africa. The Italians, feel like, got the short straw. They were assigned Ethiopia. And when they attempted to colonize Ethiopia in the 1890s with an army, they were roundly defeated at a famous battle, the Battle of Adwa in 1894, I think, or 1896. But look it up, the Battle of Adwa. The Ethiopians wiped out the invading Italian army. Now, 30-odd years later, Mussolini, the fascist dictator, he had a go in the 1930s to try to invade Ethiopia, what the Italians called Abyssinia. He was defeated. I think actually the British, probably for sort of self-interest, they helped the Ethiopians at that time in the 1930s thwart Mussolini. But anyway, the upshot is that Ethiopia was never colonized by European colonial powers. Now, that's reflected in this, Tony, that's why the Ethiopian languages are so intact. You have dozens of Ethiopian dialects and languages, separate languages in Ethiopia. Whereas, you know, you survey most African countries, they either speak French or English or Portuguese, I think in Angola and Mozambique. I mean, they speak European languages. Whereas Ethiopia, English is not uncommon, but their first languages are their own native languages, whether that's Tigrinya, Amharic, Oromia, or other languages. So this reflects the fact that the huge historical fact that, you know, significant fact that Ethiopia was never colonized. And that's why Ethiopia would be considered by African nations as the natural leader of Africa. You know, the African Union, the international body, is based, headquartered in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. Given that honor, because Ethiopia is seen as the leader of African independence due to its proud history of never being colonized.
The other thing about Ethiopia is that they've supplied this new chief, Tedros Adhanom, to the head of the World Health Organization. I wonder if you know anything about him, his background in Ethiopia.
Yeah, well, he would have been part of the TPLF-led coalition government. The Ethiopian People's Democratic Revolutionary Front. It's quite a mouthful, I know. It's the EPRDF. After that war against the Derg Stalinist regime, the TPLF very much led, they then created this coalition government of various revolutionary parties called the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, which the TPLF certainly were a driving force in. There's no doubt about it. They were a dominant faction in that coalition government. Now, Tedros Adhanom, he's Tigrinya, and he was part of the TPLF and part of the coalition government, the TPLF-led coalition government. I'm not sure exactly. I think he was the Minister of Health in that government for years. Well-respected man. He obviously knows, he's very competent. He was then appointed or elected to become the chief of the WHO. Now, the Trump administration has tried to smear him as being some sort of stooge for China, but I think that sort of smear does not stand up to the reality that he's well-respected internationally for his competence and his chairing of the WHO through the pandemic crisis.
Okay. This guy Abiy Ahmed is not quite so well respected, is he? Can you just tell us about the new prime minister, or relatively new? He's been around for a couple of years now, and we've heard over the last 6 or 8 weeks or so that Ethiopia is starting to erupt into a lot of fighting there. So who is this guy Abiy Ahmed, and what is his program?
His claims laterally that the TPLF coalition government that dominated, that was the ruling party or government for the last 30 years, something that was a dark, repressive period, is implausible and totally contradictory in that he was a minister in that government. So why he's coming out with these allegations now is kind of a very odd and, well, not really odd because it's an attempt to try to undermine the TPLF by making all these allegations. Anyway, so he came to power as a prime minister. Now, how he came to power, Tony, when I was in Ethiopia, I couldn't figure out how he actually sort of was catapulted into the prime minister's position. There was a few years of civil unrest in Ethiopia prior to his coming to power, and who was behind all that unrest, I'm not sure, but there was a lot of unrest in Ethiopia to do with economic hardships and what have you, and he then became the sort of caretaker prime minister out of backroom negotiations with the other parties, and he was made a caretaker prime minister, an interim prime minister. He wasn't elected ever. He just, through wheeling, dealing and backroom deals, he became sort of the nominated caretaker prime minister. He was supposed to face elections this year. You know, he was supposed to bring then the country to national elections, but he cancelled those elections on the pretext of the controlling the coronavirus pandemic. The TPLF, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, were, quite disconcerted by that move, and they complained that he was really just cancelling elections for his own self-interest to become a one-man ruling party, that he was averting the democratic process. And they held their own regional elections in September, and he's now accusing them of having elections that they're separatists and they're seditionists. A bit like the Catalan situation, where Madrid is accusing the Barcelona regional government of sedition from having their own regional elections or referendum there a couple of years back. So he's kind of accusing the TPLF of having unlawful elections. But those elections were scheduled as part of the deal for him coming to power in early 2018, April 2018. That was the deal. He would be made this kind of caretaker prime minister to take the country out of this sort of a period of unrest. And then thereafter, in 2 years' time, he would hold elections. But he didn't. He cancelled them due to, purportedly because of the pandemic and trying to control it, even though Ethiopia really hasn't had much of a coronavirus, epidemic. Now, maybe you should come in to try to break up my digression there, Tony.
Yeah, well, the other question, of course, is, do you think there's any evidence of outside forces getting involved here to bring him to power? Or is this just simply and purely an internal squabble?
No, I think there's an external agenda to break up Ethiopia, to break up its independence, because for all its the faults of before that may have been, it wasn't like, under the coalition government of 30 years led by the TPLF, it was a strong state, strong government. It wasn't, a liberal democracy. But I didn't see any gross violations, or I'm not aware of any gross violations. The one defect, if you like, if you could call it a defect or complaint that the West would have about Ethiopia, was it wasn't open to Western finance. They kept a very independent economic development plan and policy. And in fact, they were very close to China for investment and development. And I think that that's a big factor in why the country's been thrown into turmoil under Abiy Ahmed, as a kind of a Trojan horse figure to try to upset, to you destabilize Ethiopia and you bring it kind of to a crashing kind of disruption. And out of the ashes or out of the disruption, the country will be orientated towards Western capital under his so-called stewardship. And I think that's what's going on. Tony, his rise to power is very obscure, is very dodgy, and also the whole thing about him winning the Nobel Peace Prize was a bit of a farce, really. I mean, he won that shortly after becoming the prime minister due to ostensibly a peace deal with Eritrea, a country with which Ethiopia had been having a cold war for 20 years over a border dispute. Now, he gets the Nobel Peace Prize very prematurely, very hurriedly over an ostensible peace deal, which really, there's not much substance to the peace deal. There's not much actual practical benefit from that peace deal.
What about the strategic position of Ethiopia? You're on the coast of, or in the area of Northeast Africa, but you're also very close there to the Red Sea and Saudi Arabia and to some other hotspots. What do you think is the strategic significance of Ethiopia?
Well, I think it's huge. It's on the Red Sea, which is a major choke point in global trade, along with the Hormuz Strait and the Malacca Strait. The Red Sea is a major conduit for oil and other commercial trade shipping. It overlooks Yemen and the Middle East. It's prime strategic vantage point. Ethiopia itself is landlocked by Eritrea to the north and Djibouti to the north east and Somalia. So it doesn't have access to the Red Sea itself, but it is the location is very tremendously strategically important for its survey of the whole Horn of Africa and further north Africa. So the Americans have had a security arrangement with the Ethiopian governments down through the years. Even the TPLF-led coalition government were cooperated very closely with the Americans in terms of military counterinsurgency against Al-Shabaab and various other militants, jihadi militants. Ethiopia was a very strong partner on sort of security issues, but in terms of economic issues, they were more aligned with China, and China saw Ethiopia as its strategic partner, a gateway to the rest of Africa. China got a foothold in Ethiopia, which it did. It would be recommended or play well for other relations with the other African countries. And I think what's going on here is a move to displace China from the strategic partnership with not only Ethiopia but other African nations.
Ethiopia's suspect for that is the United States.
Well, yeah, Abiy Ahmed's career path is very dodgy. I mean, before he was a minister in the previous government, which he's now sort of abusing verbally, he was a minister in it. But before that, he was a military intelligence officer. He was a lieutenant in the Ethiopian military intelligence, and he did university studies with a private university that's in the U.S. I'm not sure if he was actually resident in the U.S. for any period of time, but he did a degree in this Ashland University in Ohio. His job being in military intelligence and setting up a national security agency in Ethiopia, the equivalent of the NSA in the States, would have given him a lot of access or contact with the CIA and American intelligence. Now, it's believed, it's alleged by Ethiopian commentators and political analysts that he was recruited into the CIA years ago, and now he's fulfilling a role on behalf of American imperial interests in Ethiopia by destabilizing the country and then, you know, consolidating power under his rule. You know, it'll make it easier for America to invest in that country, to control the finances of the country and displace China. And this is what's going on. I mean, Tony, I have to emphasize, this conflict in Tigray is only the latest episode in an ongoing ongoing conflict in Ethiopia since he came to power. He's been going around every regional the nine regions in regional governments in Ethiopia, knocking out incumbent administrations, putting in his own people. And Tigray was the last part of the jigsaw puzzle, which is now being under attack. But this conflict and these rampages have been going on, you know, for ever since he came to power. The thing about the Western media is that they didn't really cover those previous conflicts in other parts of Ethiopia because he won the Nobel Peace Prize, allegedly, you know, making peace. And he got a lot of soft coverage in the likes of the BBC and the American media as Abiy Ahmed, the Nobel Peace Prize winning prime minister who's trying to reform Ethiopia. But really what he was doing by reforming was breaking down regional governments, putting in his own central authority in place. And what's going on in Tigray is now the last episode in this whole round of reconstructing Ethiopia under
Amazing, isn't it? Because this reminds me a little bit of Aung San Suu Kyi in Burma, Myanmar, where she was given a Nobel Peace Prize, and then all of a sudden there was a terrible uprising of her army started to kill people. So it almost seems as if the idea is that you're supposed to, you know, get a lot of credibility from one of these Nobel Peace Prizes before you stick the knife in. But anyway, look, just going back to the possibility of how this might unfold, looking just over the other side of the Red Sea into Yemen, you've got a situation there where you've got a Western puppet president that was put into power. And then after about a year or 2 years, he then turned on his own people. And the Saudi Arabians came in and helped him in that fight against the Houthi rebels, so-called rebels, who actually represented the majority of people in the country rather than President Hadi. So, look, what about, is it feasible that not so far away, the other side of the Red Sea in Ethiopia, something similar could happen with a Western puppet leader actually fighting his own people for the benefit of, you know, the US Anglo-Zionist Empire?
Well, it does seem to be, you know, rather more than coincidence that, and, you know, that this is part of a rolling campaign to control that very strategically important part of the world. As I say, the Red Sea, major choke point for oil and shipping, other shipping. So it just seemed to kind of like odd that you know, at least one should raise this question as to what's going on there, as it seems to be part of a rolling campaign that we've seen in Yemen and now on the other side of the Red Sea, Ethiopia. And as to your question, Tony, well, there's certainly a danger of it. I mean, there was reports there last week where the Emiratis, the United Arab Emirates, were supplying drones to the Abe regime, and I'm going to call it a regime as opposed to a government, the Abe regime based in Addis Ababa. Now, the TPLF leaders were claiming that. I haven't seen any more evidence of it, but they were claiming that drones were being enlisted by the Abe regime from the UAE. Now, that kind of was a very disturbing similarity to Yemen, in that the UAE is a major belligerent in that war, supplying aerial weapons against the Houthi rebels. So that really raises alarm bells if the UAE were to become involved in Ethiopia. His regime have already got enlisted the help of the Eritrean military. The Eritrean military are actually in Tigray fighting alongside this Abe regime's central forces.
That's they're amazing, actually in. So he's got the Nobel Peace Prize for sorting out a peace with Eritrea. Now he's using his friends in Eritrea are helping him attack people in his own country, which sounds a very bizarre way to get a Nobel Peace Prize.
Well said, Tony. Beautifully spotted. Yeah, the incongruity of that, the contradiction. I mean, yes, exactly. You know, he cozied up to the dictator in Eritrea, Isaias Afwerki, and he is a dictator. I mean, he had some sort of a little bit of a left wing kudos years back because the Americans sanctioned him, but he is a dictator, a one man, you know, dictatorship, not a nice regime whatsoever. Like, there's no romantic thing about Eritrea being some sort of a left wing outlier revolutionary, you know, post. It's a one man dictatorship, and he's cozied up with Abiy Ahmed, and the two are in a pincer movement against the people of Tigray. I mean, the UN refugee agencies are saying there's 40,000 Tigray people in Sudan. 40,000 in the last 3 weeks. 40,000 people, mothers, children. I actually know of people who are actually in these camps. I've been able to get through phone calls through to them. Absolutely horrendous situation. These people fled in horror from attacking militia, attacking regular forces, both Eritrean and central regime forces. So there is a genocide going on here by a peace prize winning, figure, Abiy Ahmed. Now, I think to be fair to the likes of the BBC and the Western media, they have certainly developed a little bit more skepticism about this guy's credibility. Previously, they very much lionized and eulogized this guy as Nobel Peace Prize winning Abiy Ahmed, who's trying to reform Ethiopia, the implication that he's trying to sort of bring in democracy. But since then, they have begun to become a little bit more skeptical as to his agenda, and about time too, because what he is doing is absolutely abominable, you know, attacking a civilian population with the help of a foreign power. I mean, it is absolutely grotesque and absurd what he's doing. And naturally, the BBC and the other media are having to raise a few questions about what he's doing because it's so glaringly blatant what he's up to. As to become in Yemen, another Yemen, there is a dangerous potential, Tony, but I don't see it. I really don't see it because, you know, it would be such a travesty if for the central government regime in Ethiopia to try to make out that they're fighting a war against terrorists in Tigray, because it is so absurdly false. I mean, the Tigray people, are well respected around the world. As I say, Tedros Adhanom is the chairman of the WHO. There is no evidence whatsoever to substantiate his outlandish claims that the Tigray people are harboring terrorists. I mean, it just does not stand up.
No, now, I mean, what do you make of this in the future then for this? Where do you think it's heading?
My sources to the TPLF, the Tigray people and the TPLF forces, the TPLF party and the Tigray military are very unified and have got the full support of the people, and they're putting up quite a formidable resistance against this central regime's forces. The propaganda from the regime conveyed by the media would have us believe that they're taking over Tigray. They've captured various cities. On the ground, sources are telling me that the Tigray people are fighting back formidably. They have got the organization. They have got the conviction of their principles. They have got justice on their side, and they're fighting for their lives. And as the TPLF leader, Detbretzon Gebremichael, said the other day, Abiy Ahmed doesn't know who we are. He does not know what kind of people we are, that we will fight till the death to defend our nation, their country of Tigray. You know, this could, I know it's kind of risky to make predictions, but I think this guy, Abiy Ahmed, this imposter who has got a Nobel Peace Prize, I think he's caused so much havoc in Ethiopia, not just against the Tigray people, but against even his own people, the Oromo, the Somali people in eastern Ethiopia, the Afar people, the southern nations. He has caused so much turmoil that the whole country is seething against him. It's not being reported, but there are insurrections in various parts of Ethiopia against his so-called plan to centralize power.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? So it may be that there's resentment from other regional sub-areas of Ethiopia who have actually brought in, the pro-central government Abiy forces in their regions now actually may be beginning to change their mind after what they've seen what's happened in Tigray.
Yes, well, I mean, he imposed his party people on these regions against their will. I mean, they weren't, you know, happy about his takeover of their regional governments by his yes men. And he slaughtered his way to put these people in power. This is over the last 2 years. Now, you didn't get reports on that, some reports, but there was massive killings going on by his forces to suppress the various regions under his so-called single party. It's called the Prosperity Party that he formed. It's quite Orwellian, really, the Prosperity Party. But there was always resistance. Now, the resistance is becoming even stronger because of what he's overstretched by going up to Tigray and trying to kind of cause havoc and to overhaul the government in his liking up there. But meantime, behind his back, there's uproar from all over the place. Ethiopia is not a happy place. It's not like he's got the whole country behind him supporting his offensive in Tigray. Not at all. There's lots of insurrections and resistance and uproar going on all around the country because out of disgust of the mayhem he's causing. I mean, Ethiopia for 30 years was a very prosperous, stable, strong, relatively peaceful country, probably one of the best countries in Africa. And all of a sudden, in 2 years, it's turned into an absolute charnel house. Now, how is that? What has happened? Anybody should be skeptical about, that rapid descent into madness under the so-called guidance of a Nobel Peace Prize winner. I mean, it's just dramatic, the absolute precipitous collapse of the country. And it's all over the country. It's not just in Tigray. It's just that in the Tigray conflict has got a lot more coverage than the others. But it's been the same pretty much all over the various regions.
Okay, so Finian, whereabouts can people find your work online, or which journals, that sort of thing?
I write for three outlets currently, Tony, and that's Sputnik, RT, and Strategic Culture Foundation. They're all based in Russia. They're international English language news services, but people can find articles. I write regularly, almost every day, for those three outlets, not always on Ethiopia, mind you, but recently, of course, I have been doing that because it's where I consider my home. I mean, I was living there. I hope to go back there. I have family roots there, like millions of other people, tens of thousands of other people, I'm displaced from my home because of this conflict. So I've been writing about Ethiopia, and I would like to say that not trying to be as objective as possible, but I'm certainly passionately writing about it because of the horrific injustice that's going on. But I do try to give the picture as truthfully as possible, despite my kind of a passionate interest in and you know, anger over the injustice. But anyway, if people want to follow up articles on that and other subjects, I mentioned the three outlets I work for.
Okay, Finney and Cunningham, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony, and thanks to your listeners for listening.